Dirty Moderates, one of the great joys of my life was reading James Baldwin. For those of you who don't know who that is, he probably, along with Joan Didion, is the foremost essayist on American life, race, but also culture, sexuality, of the second half of the 20th century. But of course, he's known for being an important and significant Black voice who broke in the 1950s with his novel, Go Tell It on the Mountain, still a classic, by the way, 1953. And by the time the Montgomery bus boycott in 55 and eventually the civil rights movement came along, he was on the cover of Time magazine for his famous The Fire Next Time, which was his excoriation of American racism and the inability of this country to live up to its ideals. But few people wrote as incisively, as eloquently, and perceptively about what's real. And especially about not denying, facing truths. And he forewarned us. Unfortunately, he died at 63 from stomach cancer in 1987. But his voice remains immortal because he, if you read his essays, and I highly, highly recommend a collection of a lot of his nonfiction essays. He has a lot of novels too, but his nonfiction is where he really thrived. It's called The Price of the Ticket. It's available. It's a huge tome of a book taking you through his writings from the late 40s all the way till he was writing for New York Magazine and Playboy Magazine. And he wasn't hired by them, but he wrote for all the big ones, Esquire. And I was very lucky to be taught him in my undergrad. And he informed so much of my thinking. And we will share some links of James Baldwin for you on our Substack through the weekend when I tackle this. But all of this is to say, this is not just about James Baldwin. It's to say that I had never heard his voice. I hadn't heard the voice of Toni Morrison, who in her novel Beloved, I think is one of the great novels written in American literature since 1975. I say that because I think everything before the 70s was... It's still a different era of literature, but again, timeless, unforgettable, uncomfortable, disturbing, but real. Both of these authors say until America faces itself, it really can't be the land of liberty. It really can't ultimately realize the principles of freedom and justice, because they're not just talking about principles in a pragmatic or legal sense, like, oh, you know, this guy is passing this bill or this congresswoman's doing this, or, you know, we're having a voting rights march, or all of that's very important. They're talking about what's underneath it, the subterranean, right? The hidden layers of American life, which burble up with all the madness and the craziness, which we're seeing now. We're seeing now in a major form of backlash, or maybe we should call it blacklash. I heard that term a lot when Donald Trump was first elected in 2016, sort of his election was a reaction to 8 years of Obama. And now we've got Ron DeSantis, who has been on an authoritarian crusade in his first term, and now he was given a 19-point victory in his second term. He's absolutely one of the bright stars, I hate to say it, of the Republican Party going forward, not the party of Lincoln, the Trumpublican Party. But one of the things he's been doing is engaging in all of their, let's just call it, censorship. That is using the power of his office, of government, state government, but government, and the Florida Department of Education to decide what can be taught in schools, right? The famous law that says you have to be older than third grade to hear about anything relating to gender or sexuality, colloquially known as Don't Say Gay, but that's not what the bill is really called. But it's as simple as if a teacher, the gay teacher, has a picture of their partner on their desk, and a kid says, "Who's that?" And they say, "That's my husband," or "That's my wife," or "That's my partner of the same gender," or non-binary, whatever the case may be. They could be reported and written up and threatened. And people in Florida, teachers in Florida, are starting to get really upset, more than upset. They're starting to fear for their job security. And the punitive nature of somebody like DeSantis, who uses the bully pulpit as a pulpit of bull, but as a pulpit of bullying, too. One of his big achievements, achievements, in quotes, is the Stop Woke Act, which is now tied up in court because it would dictate to all the state-run universities what they can teach regarding race and gender and the like. Folks, this runs afoul of the Constitution. This runs afoul of our foundational ideas. But now, circling back to James Baldwin, Toni Morrison, he is going to ban the course that has been explored now for a while and thought about. This has been led by a number of scholars, most notably Harvard's Henry Louis Gates Jr., who you all may know, who does always the documentaries on roots and you know, your DNA, but he's written prolifically, and he's been a professor for most of his career. He's also the guy that famously was stopped by the police in Cambridge because they thought he didn't live at this fancy house, which he does because he's incredibly successful and well off. And Obama got involved, and then they had the famous beer summit with Obama and Biden, Skip Gates and the cop. Skip Gates is what they call him, to sort of make amends. And Obama, it's really Obama's first wading, W-A-D-I-N-G, not waiting, wading into the area of race, which, despite his biracial identity, he kind of tried to transcend or stay away from. You know, again, he won the white vote pretty solidly twice, so politically it probably was the right thing to do. However, the banning of AP African American literature for what DeSantis says, because for what DeSantis claims has, quote, no educational value. Of course, this is a slimy culture war thing. But of course, this is all tied up in appealing to a demographic that is, I always like to say, is panic at the straight white disco. Okay. People who are really, they're of an older generation. They don't like America getting browner, blacker, more ethnic. They don't like the move toward discussions about the fluidity of sexuality. They don't like that the trans community and their dignity would be front and center and protected and discussed about. They do feel, you know, assaulted by all of it. And they're losing their grip. And DeSantis is their champion. I mean, you might even say he's their emissary, or he's their avatar. And so now they don't even want to allow, where many, many schools are going to adopt this. It's essentially African-American history, literature, culture, geography, political history, politics. One of the great joys of my graduate work and undergraduate work, which is where I was first introduced to James Baldwin by the great George Shulman, professor of political philosophy at NYU, was being exposed to this, because it's essential. African-American studies is American studies. African-American life is American life. You don't have to rehash the argument of who came here against their will when a slave ship first arrived here in 1619 with people against their will. Yeah. Yes. Teaching this is important, and teaching that trajectory from bondage, right, to slavery, I mean, to the Civil War and the end of slavery, to the failure of Reconstruction, to the Great Migration from the South to the North and the Midwest, as I'm preferring, all of this refers to the Black experience, all the way to the end of Jim Crow with civil rights and Black power, Black Panthers, very important stuff, Angela Davis, all that stuff, all those movements, and then in the 70s, and then the emergence of, you know, Jesse Jackson, the Rainbow Coalition, and of course, Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, both assassinated at 39 years old in there, as well as voices, but Ralph Abernathy, many others, Bayard Rustin, it goes on, John Lewis. You know, teaching this is teaching a parallel track in American history that's very much part of it, but that has been obscured and not discussed. As James Baldwin said, not faced. Baldwin famously said, nothing can be changed if it is not faced. So now we have a gag order. It's relating to gender and sexuality. It's relating to race. Specifically, how amazing would it be for students, certainly students who excel, because AP students are usually the better students in the class, and then they get credit, hopefully toward their college work, who are going to go into English and history and political science, American studies, or African American studies as a major in a lot of colleges. Black studies is what it used to be called. It came about in the late 60s when the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Ford Foundations came up and said, we're going to start funding some programs at universities to endow the experience for people, to let people be able to understand what that is. And in my graduate work, there were a lot of professors of color who said, oh, wow, you know, it's great that you're going to start concentrating. I actually did 19th and 20th century African-American literature, but that also overlaps with politics because American studies, African-American studies, you know, it's a boundary breaking. It moves from, you know, history is connected to literature, which is connected to culture, which is connected to politics, which is connected to the way we live now, the way we lived then. And yeah, of course, this is race baiting. And of course, it's deeply problematic and all that stuff. But instead of just saying that, think about what we as a country and what these students in Florida will lose. I'm from Miami Beach. I'm a Florida born boy. Watching my home state descend not just into a quote unquote ruby red state, but a laboratory of madness. Louis Brandeis famously said, it's a pretty old former Supreme Court justice, states should be the laboratories of democracy. We have 50 of them. They have a lot of autonomy and should under the 10th Amendment, which reserves their power, all power not granted the federal government, really is up to the states. But they are using taxpayer funds. DeSantis is going ahead and making decisions in public education that you have to pay for. Now flip this on its head and imagine a Democratic governor was pushing the teaching of the artist Serrano, S-E-R-A-N-O, who famously created a scandal, in the late 80s, when he took Christ, an image of Christ, and put him in a jar of urine. It was art, you know, and the National Endowment of the Arts, the religious right at the time went crazy. But imagine that a governor, that Robert Mapplethorpe, who died of AIDS, was posting incredibly sexual images of men, naked men, having sex, and all sorts of things. Imagine that a Democratic governor said that the state must teach, must teach avant-garde sexual art. And so that's what has to happen. Do you think for one second there would not just be lawsuits galore, there would be protests and rallies 24/7 on Fox News, Newsmax, OANN would be frothing at the mouth? Frothing. Like an attack dog on guard. It would be something, which is to say that an educational curriculum should be expansive and quite frankly should be educational. And the reason I brought James Baldwin in at the beginning is to say how much that changed my life. And I wasn't victim to that. I was fortunate enough to go to private school. We didn't have these politics in the 80s and 90s, not in the same way. But, you know, Trumpism is alive and well, even if its iteration, its new iteration, is Ronald DeSantis, who seems to be just taking a page from the playbook of outrage, division, fear, and loathing, and exploiting it for political gain. We don't know what he believes or what he doesn't believe. But yet here we are with a prospect in the United States of America in 2023 of having an advanced level placement course on the history of American people who have a very unique experience, who were brought here against their own will in 1619 and have endured in this unique country, which is, as I always say, is a fantastic place for this country to try to live up to its ideals, to its founding creed, to creedal notions. So that's where we are. I was talking to my producer before this started saying, and we were just saying, you know, there is no party of limited government. They aren't that. This is now the party that weaponizes government. They weaponize. That's what they do. Government's not about getting out of your private life. Government is, you know, the Supreme Court overturns Dobbs. What happened this summer? Now, they paid a price for it. The polls, Lindsey Graham came out and said, we're going to pursue, if they thought they're going to get the Senate. They said, we're going to pursue a federal ban on abortions. Wait a second. I thought the whole point was, and I don't agree with this because I think women's bodies should be protected as a matter of privacy. But I thought it was, hey, we're just sending this back to the states for the voters to decide. Not so fast. So when they're in power in a particular state, yeah, they can push this through. But what if they wanted it nationally? National bans on this and national bans on that. All of this, right, under the sphere of government is a violation of the First Amendment. In terms of a lot of the religious stuff, it's a violation. Well, that's First Amendment as well, but church and state. We have a lot of culture wars that go on here, and the Democrats aren't good at them. They often take the bait, go looking for trouble, as Groucho Marx says, and end up with the wrong remedies. What has to be pointed out isn't just what the Republicans are doing is bad or what DeSantis is doing is authoritarian, all that's true, but what we as Americans are losing by this. The Democrats don't have to make it. That doesn't mean everybody in the United States is a racist. It means, though, that our national story, our national origin story, is incredibly steeped in race, drenched in it, and the existential fight of a people for their dignity. That's part of the American story, every bit as the Native American massacres and murder of all the indigenous communities, every bit as much as the rise of, you know, the United States as a leading world power, and you know, the triumphs of Abe Lincoln and the fight against racial justice. I mean, you know, in the Declaration of Independence is ratified in 1776. And of course, there were all these concessions to Southern slave owners. But what we also need to teach alongside this, but we seem to always have, you know, there's never a dirty moderate. It's either this or that, either or. Vermont made slavery illegal in 1777. So 1 year later. Yeah, that's what they did. Not saying they're getting off scot-free. But yeah, they said, we are banning this inhumane practice of human bondage in our state. But how can we know this if we're not willing to teach it, right? The shortcomings and the short-sightedness of the Republicans who keep pushing this is they're also sacrificing a chance to show why America did what it did, but also how it's grown and how it's changed and how much progress we've made. But we have nothing to talk about if we can't start from truth. If we can't begin with reality, if we act like 1619 when slaves first came, or 1776 when the Declaration was ratified, or 1787 when the Constitution was, if we act like that's the same thing as 2023, then we only keep ourselves essentially in the dark. We only allow ourselves not the beauty and the contours of a complicated, rich history, but the myths and the lies and the evasions, which we think is all we have to sustain us. The DeSantis course is a destructive one, no different from other governors who are using the government to weaponize against marginalized groups everywhere. But to think that people couldn't and now en masse have access to James Baldwin or Toni Morrison, all the thinkers. That, folks, to paraphrase James Baldwin's fire next time, is actually the fire this time. Folks, thank you for joining me. As always, don't forget to go to my Substack. We're going to talk more about my write about this weekend. It's dirtymoderate.com, dirtymoderate.com. Make sure if you're listening to this and you are not subscribing to this podcast, we have got new episodes every week. You've got my monologue here, guests galore. We've got many from the first year. We're just beginning our second year, proudly, thanks to you guys. So Google, Amazon, Spotify, Apple, Pandora, iHeartRadio, all of that. You can find us on multiple platforms. Subscribe. Go ahead. Don't forget. And by the way, a year out before a presidential election, go to vote.org if you are not registered to vote, because even though the voting population seems to be a little more excited about showing up at the polls, we have a long way to go. I always tell people in 2020, 101 million people did not vote, even though two-thirds did. Next year is going to be yet another battle for the soul of democracy. Folks, thank you for joining me. In the meantime, stay dirty, stay moderate, and stay safe.